Could you introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi, my name is John D'Antonio, New Mexico State Engineer.
And then could you kind of explain water adjudication?
Sure. Water adjudications, in fact, and I have an outline. It's a pretty complicated process. It's somewhat akin to a ownership of a piece of property in which you have clear title of a piece of property. You know who owned the property beforehand and where it happens. But in an adjudication process, actually, the state engineer or a judge comes in and they order a hydrographic survey, which means of a certain stream. So you go in and you look at the water uses within that particular stream. And then my office actually, the staff reviews water rights records. We look at digital, what we call imagery and mapping of water use out in the field, and we analyze that use and verify land and ownership records.
Sorry.
Do you want to start over? Or do you?
Yeah, let me turn this off.
I can start over.
There was just one point where I didn't realize it was on.
That's something I would have done.
I know. I'm supposed to be there. If you just...
Okay. So in the adjudication process, after we look at the water rights records and we obtain that imagery and we start looking at the mapping and the water use and verify ownership information, then we field check. So we have staff that goes out there in the field. We use the survey. We look at all the irrigated tracts that have been claimed, and we take what we call global positioning station, the instruments out there to verify where the land is, and owners, we talk to owners in the field. And then we input an informational GIS system, and the hydrographic survey maps and reports are produced, and then they're sent over to the legal staff. What the legal staff does is they start preparing these proceedings that are started by the state and in some cases by the federal government or any other interested person, and there's a lawsuit that's filed, essentially. And that's why it becomes an adversarial process. The state files a lawsuit against the owners. We also give what we call offers of judgment, and we sent to each individual owner what we feel is their water right based on all the information that we have, all the mapping, all the field checks, and all that information. What the water rights owners do, they have an opportunity to either challenge what we've established as their water right. They can also challenge others. They think maybe their neighbor got too much, so they can do that. And it's called the inter-se process, and it's got that ability to do that. And then after all said and done, the judge would issue a final decree, and it defines all the water rights in that particular adjudicated area. So within New Mexico, we have about 12 active adjudications, and we have about 65,000 defendants, and it's all over the state of New Mexico. We've got adjudications going on everywhere. And the only what happens, the ultimate product out of that adjudication, it gives certainty to that water right owner exactly what amount of water rights they own, what their priority date is, what their points of diversions and places of use are. And so that really is the final step in determining a water right. Unfortunately, in New Mexico, we're only about 20% adjudicated. We're working on an additional 40%, and we're stretched pretty thin because it's a lot of it has to do with what a judge wants in a particular area, and they dictate what sort of resources we need to spend, and so we're kind of spread out and spread thin, and a lot of times that hydrographic information becomes stale and it's old information, and we have to do restudies. That's it in a nutshell.
I mean, it seemed, you know, you took the restudies, I assume, because water is so fluid and it just, I mean, everything changes, and it seems like it's a really hard thing to pin down.
Well, the continual use, that's part of the water right in the West, is what's determinable on a water right is not only when you put water to beneficial use and the place of that use, but it's also predicated on continuous use. So somebody that doesn't use a water right over a period of time could actually lose that water right based on non-use. And so in a lot of cases, maybe there's some development that happens, a parking lot overlays what used to be an agricultural piece of property, a Walmart comes in and builds, and so the water rights that were associated with those properties are no longer there.
Okay. So So as far as the adjudication, I mean, what does it mean for the agricultural?
Well, as far as the having that certainty and knowing what your water right is and what it in the amount and that you're the rightful owner, it really lends certainty to the whole marketplace, to the individual owner, and really because our agricultural communities are some of the most senior users within the state, it really helps protect their usage, and so that when they go out and we have a shortage of supply in a given year and we have to maybe cut off junior users, which could be cities, it could be other developments, what it does, it actually helps preserve those agricultural or senior water rights so that they're assured of getting their water the earliest based on a short supply year.
Okay. And I know, you know, just talking to farmers and ranchers, they have, not all of them, but a few of them have been really skeptical of the whole process. I mean, have you encountered that?
Oh, sure. Anytime you're dealing with people's water rights, it's a personal property right. And, you know, when you're with a government entity, most people assume that you're going to come in and you're going to take something away from them. What we find is that we try to educate people on what their water right is. We try to really, by adjudicating, it's really that ultimate step that helps protect their water right and assures them of defining what that water right is. And it also allows us to go in and look at anybody that might be over-diverting or illegally diverting water so that we can actually make sure that the rightful owner gets their water on any given year.
And I didn't put this in the questions, but when I was in the eastern part of the state, a lot of people were really talking about the dairies and how a lot of people have come in from California and started the dairies because there's not so much regulation on the water and because they use a lot of water. I don't know, have you, you know, I know that you probably have people that are specifically in area.
Most of the regulation in the dairy industry comes from the New Mexico Environment Department on water quality issues. As the state engineer's office, what we look at is water use and total use. So if there was a dairy came in and wanted to take over a farming operation that was developing a crop, what we would do is we would be able to allow for that same consumptive use of water to be used in a dairy. So in other words, there's no additional depletions to that particular system. If an alfalfa crop, say, was using X amount of water and that was the consumptive use of that water, that's the only thing that we would recognize as a transfer in purpose of use from farming to dairy processes. And that change in purpose of use, we would only allow for the consumptive use that was already used in the agricultural process so that there's no additional water use. So where our office comes in as far as regulating is we're just protecting the depletions to that system. There are other water quality issues that the New Mexico Environment Department has to deal with and deal with water quality and discharge and permits and things like that.
Okay, so they aren't going above?
No, they're not using any additional water than was used prior to them coming in.
Okay, because that's a lot of people feel that they are, yeah. And so I wanted to make sure to ask about that. Are you comfortable?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, as far as development, I mean, that's another thing that people are talking about.
Right. And development is a big concern over the entire western United States. If you look at growth projections, most of the western states are projected to grow immensely in the next few years. New Mexico in the next 40 years, we're expected to grow by 85%. States like Utah in that same 40-year period of time are expected to double a lot of the western states. And where's the water going to come from? Well, essentially in most of those states, roughly 75% of water is being used in agriculture. And when we consider most of our river basins and stream systems fully appropriated, it means we're not going to allow for a new use to come in and use new water. There's got to be a change in place and purpose of use of existing water. So naturally, as populations grow, there's going to be some water that's going to have to come out of agricultural production to accommodate the growth of our cities, and really to really have a sustainable economy and a state, my feeling is that you've got to have a strike a balance between those. You can't allow too much water to go out of agriculture because you need those green belts to be able to maintain drought scenarios and manage. And you need to be able to manage yourself through the cycle of droughts that we're going to continue to have, and you certainly don't want all water coming out of agriculture.
You know, I know you said that you don't have exact numbers, but do you have any estimate?
Well, here's a number, and people, it's somewhat of a deceiving number, but you could take 10% of the water out of agriculture and accommodate a doubling of the state's population. That's and that's with a caveat in that we don't always have a full supply year. But in New Mexico, we use roughly about 4.4 million acre feet of water. 75% or 76% of that is used in agriculture. You know, the next biggest user, which is interesting, is reservoir evaporation. That uses 10% of the water in the state. 9% of the water in the state is used through public water supply systems and domestic wells. And then only 3% is used for mining and power. And then 2% of the water use in the state is for commercial, industrial, and livestock use. And so when you look at those percentages, you say, well, water is probably going to come out of agriculture, but there's not a whole lot that has to come out of agriculture if we make sure that we do it right and just allow for the consumptive use and then just grow in the areas that we can accommodate that growth, because not every area is are those percentages consistent where you have 75% in ag and the rest in those other uses.
And what is the process of taking it from agriculture? Is it people There's, who aren't using it? Is it just like a percentage is coming from every
The process that's used when you take water out of agricultural production, it's a permitting process, and it's really a voluntary process. If a city wants to continue to grow, they've got to make sure they have adequate water rights associated with their water use. We can use the city of Rio Rancho, for instance, which is really a pretty new city, but it's growing fairly rapidly. And they've got a permit with my office that requires them to have to acquire so many acre feet every five-year period of time. And those water rights that they have to obtain, they really offset the groundwater pumping to the river, because as soon as you take a gallon of water out of the ground, depending on how close you are to the river, it essentially affects the flow in the river. And so the requirements are that on a schedule, they take water and from some farm area somewhere, dry up that land, and they transfer the consumptive use over into the city's use. And it's all done through a permitting process. There's got to be an application that's filed. There's notice provisions that are required in the newspaper for 3 consecutive weeks after the last protest or the last publishing date. There's a 10-day protest period. Typically, every single application for transfer is protested. And so then we have to set up a hearing process, and we have to look at the technical details of whether or not there's impairment that would be caused by a transfer of those water rights. So there's a lot of public protections in place. The growth, it just doesn't happen unless you're out there drilling a domestic well, and prior state law required me to issue a domestic well permit no matter who applied for a permit. Everything else we're talking about really requires a permit that's got to go through an application process.
Right, and when water is retired or transferred from agriculture to development, I mean, that once it's retired, that's life, right? It's not
when we talked about changing water and changing it from an agricultural to a different use, and what we have is you have a move from location to a move to location. That's how the application is made. You're moving water from a farm to a city, for instance, and so that move from location, what you're doing is you're severing the water rights from that move from location. So you've got to do verifications, and part of the permit condition would be to dry up that land. So once a water right is moved from that move from location, it cannot be irrigated from any other source unless they go through another permitting process to transfer a valid water right back onto that move from location.
And does that, have they started, has anyone, or is, you know, is it the beginning of the transfers, or have people been able to transfer water back yet? Has that happened, or are we just in the beginning of?
In most cases, the move from locations, people have not tried to transfer water back to those locations. There are some areas that concern us, some of the irrigation districts or conservancy districts within the state. If there's water rights that have been transferred off, and then the irrigation or conservancy district provides that move from parcel additional water, you're essentially double dipping into the water supply system of the state. And what we're trying to do is make sure we correct that situation. But no, typically once water is moved off from a location, people haven't tried to transfer water back on.
And then do you know where the majority of the water is being transferred to? Is it?
Well, most of the growth in New Mexico is and has been on the Rio Grande corridor. You know, you see the big cities that are growing. Albuquerque is in pretty good shape with their water rights because they have San Juan Chama water, which is water that came over from the Colorado system through a series of tunnels and into the middle Rio Grande. And so they have adequate water rights in which to grow. But if you look at the cities, Rio Rancho is a big, fast-growing area. City of Santa Fe is fast-growing. But if you look down in the middle Rio Grande, down in the Las Lunas and Belen area, Bernalillo area, north of Albuquerque, all those areas are growing. And so within that Rio Grande system, you've got to be able to find water rights that are typically going to come out of agriculture to accommodate that growth. Of course, in northern New Mexico, we've got the acequias, and there's a huge public welfare issue with respect to those types of areas because of the cultural importance of the acequia communities and whether or not water should be allowed to be transferred out of acequias into some of the northern cities that are actually growing. And those are all taken into consideration. Once an application is made to transfer water rights from an acequia, for instance, if they have some bylaws in place, it allows for the constituency of that acequia to deny a transfer. I'm not sure it would withstand a constitutional challenge because the water rights are held by the individual owner. But so far, at least, it's helped try to preserve some of the acequia culture and the water in the acequia communities.
So I have two more questions, and then if there's anything else that you'd like to say. One is, what does it mean to be New Mexican? And one of the grants that I got was through the New Mexico Humanities Council, and this is just something that has to be incorporated.
Well, you know, I'm a native New Mexican. I was born in Albuquerque. I went to school here. I went to college in New Mexico. And, you know, it's my home state. And, I recognize the cultural diversity within the state of New Mexico. I understand and have to balance the Native American water rights issues with the Spanish and Mexican culture that has come across and so a lot of the acequia development, the early irrigation districts that came with the federal projects and now most recently the economic development interests that come in and the jobs that are provided and where our kids are going to maintain hopefully a place to work when they get of the age where they're going to be looking for jobs. And so, you know, as a native New Mexican, I really feel like it's my responsibility to balance all these uses, to make sure we have responsible economic growth. We take care of the environment, but we also provide for those opportunities to have a sound economy. And it's a real tricky situation. We've got a lot of issues that we're dealing with. There's the climate variability is a big issue, and things that we're trying to get in place within the state involve a lot of measuring and metering devices that we need to put in place. We have accountability of water use. We're trying to put in rules and regulations so that we know how to manage water and the rightful person gets their water. And really, we need to try to maintain those agricultural communities so that if and when we get into those drought cycles, because we know those drought cycles are going to happen, that we have the ability to employ some water banking techniques and some things to allow water to transfer within a reasonable amount of time so that we can actually continue our economies but provide enough drinking water and really take into consideration the safety and health of our citizenry. So I think being a New Mexican in this position is very important.
Yeah. And then the second question is, and I didn't send this question, but, you know, I'm looking at the connection between land and culture, and I'm asking people if they have an example, like if there's something that they see in the culture that is a direct link from the land, like the cambalache, you know, when people, it's the harvest, the trade. When people get together after harvest, and or like buffalo dance for some pueblos, and you know, is there anything that you think of that you can really see makes a direct link between the land and the culture? That,
well, I think the water is the vital link between the land and the culture, and as I mentioned, I think earlier, you know, the Native Americans were the first people that inhabited, you know, parts of New Mexico, and a lot of that was agricultural use, and we recognize that. Although the Pueblos and tribes are sovereign nations, we still try to work on settling their water rights issues. The acequia culture, I mean, the entire northern part of New Mexico really evolved around these acequia communities and the culture of the river and the sharing that took place essentially when there were shortages, and they identified what amount of water they thought they were going to get in a particular year, and they decided how they were going to share that water resource. That's a lot of the philosophy that happens in the rest of the state, where we try to impart shortage sharing techniques and other techniques instead of going to a strict priority administration system. And so there's a lot of issues between the land and cultural issues, and I think water is integral in every single one of them, because really water is the basis for life anywhere, and New Mexico's evolved, and the culture runs pretty deep in those early developments and is still here today.
And if there's anything else that you'd like to say?
No, other than you know, the New Mexico Office of the State Engineer, Interstate Stream Commission, we're involved in every corner of the state of New Mexico. We're trying to do what's right. We're trying to be fair with everybody's water rights and water issues, and they're tough decisions that we have to make, and we try to weigh everything through a really public participation process, and try to work with an existing law, and still you know, do what's best for all New Mexicans.
Thank you.
Good.